Hello, I'm Roman Pitt, and this is SciTech File on Radio Canada International. On the show this week, web crawler Stephen Fraygood sets us up with a spring tonic, and we answer a listener's question about the heat that our society is generating. But first, we take a closer look at our sensitivity to electricity. Electricity is all around us. For example, the toaster that you use in the morning uses electricity, all the while emitting an electromagnetic field, while your bread darkens. At the same time, your coffee maker emits its charges while producing your morning cup of Java. And should you decide to microwave any other part of your breakfast, that's still another electromagnetic field. Add to this the radio being on, a remote telephone that you answer while scanning your emails on your laptop at the breakfast table, and you're up to 6 different electromagnetic fields that are working around you simultaneously. And in winter, you probably do all this with the lights on in the morning because it's a tad dark. And that's a 7th field. Don't feel so bad. While preparing this story, I realized that I've got a few things emitting an electromagnetic field in my work environment that pretty much beat your morning breakfast. Overhead fluorescent lights, a desktop computer, a computer screen, a television monitor, 2 set-top audio boxes that allow us to listen and edit various sound files that we need, a telephone, although it's not an electronic one, I'm told it still emits some electricity, and my cell phone. Now let's see, that's 8 different kinds of electrical apparatus that emit an electromagnetic field. By the way, close by there are colleagues, all with varying degrees of similar equipment, emitting their own electromagnetic fields. Excuse me for a sec while I make a little note. Talk to boss about work area. Now, we've all heard that living near hydro lines is not good for you. Kids have been proven to get leukemia from power lines close to homes. So, can working and living in the home near all of these electromagnetic fields be any better? Are we electrosensitive? Well, the debate has gone on for years about whether power around us is intense enough to at least cause some of us to be electro-hypersensitive. And can that sensitivity lead to more debilitating conditions? Magda Havas is an associate professor at the Environmental Studies Department of Trent University in Ontario, Canada. She's also an expert on the health claims of electricity. I asked her if we are overdoing it with the multitude of things that are electrical around us.
We are inundating our society with electromagnetic energy. Toronto, for example, recently claimed that they're going to go wireless this summer and this fall. A number of cities are doing that so people can then use their computers without having to hook up to anything. And all this does is every invention and innovation like this, which is extremely convenient and certainly, you know, something most people would want to have access to, begins to continuously add another layer of electromagnetic energy. And, you know, if we were able to see the energy that we're exposed to in a city environment in the form of flashing lights or something, I think it would drive us absolutely batty from seeing, you know, just so much going on simultaneously. If we were able to hear this kind of energy, it would drive us mad from the sounds and the variety of the noises that we would be exposed to. Now, I think what a lot of people perhaps don't recognize is that living organisms are electromagnetic beings. We can measure brainwave activity electromagnetically. We can measure your heart and measure the electric field and the magnetic field given off by your heart. And indeed, every time you make a fist or move a muscle, you can do that because your nervous system, that's the electrical wiring in your body. It's sending, you know, electrical messages down along it. And so if you have anything that interferes with the messages that your body is sending to yourself, you might expect it to become quite confused. And I think that's ultimately what is happening to a lot of people. It's increasing their stress level. Now, that doesn't mean we have to go without any of these, you know, modern conveniences. I think we just have to use them more intelligently and perhaps not inundate every environment and simply expect that there are not going to be any adverse health effects.
So the symptoms that people complain about are not psychosomatic?
Well, I certainly don't think it's psychosomatic. We've done studies looking at something known as dirty electricity or poor power quality. And when we remove the dirty electricity from a home or from a school, the occupants benefit. The studies that we did in the school environment were actually blinded studies, so there was no placebo effect.
What exactly do you mean by dirty electricity?
Well, dirty electricity is a popular term that refers to power quality issues, and the utilities have been aware for many years that delivering good quality power that has a 60 hertz sine wave in North America, is critical. A lot of the equipment that we use, every time you, like computers for example, every time you turn a light on and off, it puts a spike on top of the normal electricity that's flowing through your walls, and these are called transients. And so if you have a lot of people turning things on and off in an office environment, for example, or energy efficient appliances coming on and off, then what you're generating are a lot of spikes on your electrical wiring. And these are high frequency events. They're within the radio frequency range, and they're simply flowing through the wires in your wall. One of the reasons that early computers needed surge suppressors was that the quality of the power wasn't good enough. And if you had a surge coming into your computer, you could actually disable your computer or, in some cases, harm it. So power quality is something that's known by the utility industry. It's something they're concerned about. But their primary concern is with it's damaging electrical equipment and something known as electromagnetic interference. What's new in all of this is that we're beginning to document that this form of energy is actually biologically active. And so if someone goes into an environment where there's a lot of dirty electricity, they might get ill. And if you then clean up that environment, their symptoms disappear.
Is this sensitivity similar to a type of chemical imbalance in the body?
Unfortunately, we don't know enough about what's happening in the body as a response to it. We're at the stage of documenting what the symptoms are, but not understanding all of the underlying mechanisms. With chemical sensitivity or multiple chemical sensitivity, it's usually a chemical in the environment that triggers a reaction. So in a sense, it's similar in that here you now have an electromagnetic energy that is triggering the reaction. So in that regard, they're quite similar.
So you're saying that that chemical in this case are the waves?
That's right. The agent, I'd prefer not to use the word chemical for that, but the agent is the electromagnetic energy.
So I guess at about this time, you're wondering, what exactly are the symptoms of electrical hypersensitivity?
The symptoms of electrical hypersensitivity are quite varied. They include cognitive dysfunction. So people I've talked to tell me that they have very poor short-term memory. They can't remember things from 1 minute to the next. They forget the names of their best friends. They have difficulty thinking. Some actually tell me if they go into a certain office at work, for example, where there's fluorescent lighting, they develop a headache and they become quite confused. It's almost like developing a foggy brain, which is how they term it. They just have difficulty thinking. Some people develop headaches, they develop body aches and pains. Other people become overwhelmed emotionally. So yes, there is an emotional element to it. Frustration, anxiety attacks are commonly reported. If you have this problem at home, you will probably have difficulty sleeping as well. Sleep disorders are quite common. And consequently, you'll be quite tired during the day. And the fatigue is much greater than what you would be, you know, consider normal fatigue. Some of the people I've talked to tell me that they don't know what it is not to be tired. The concept to them doesn't mean anything because they feel they've been tired their entire lives. So these people are really suffering quite substantially, and it's interfering with the quality of their life. And as a matter of fact, there have been a number of laboratory studies showing that when you expose mice and rats to electromagnetic energy, that they produce something called stress proteins. What that tells you is that the organism is under some form of physiological stress. And I think the same is happening in people as well. And so if your body's under stress all day, you're naturally going to be quite tired. And it's going to interfere with your immune system. And so you'll develop colds that will last much longer. People claim that they have flu-like symptoms. So the symptoms vary quite substantially from individual to individual.
Coming up next, how Professor Havas tested various environments for that dirty electricity, and some interesting results. But first, a preview of what's coming up later in the show.
Hi there. I'm Stephen Fragood with the best spring tonic on the web.
I'm here to talk about happiness because happiness is and always will be the point of it all.
Everything from happiness TV to the latest in modern science.
We think that there's some sort of synergistic effect going on here between the gin and the vermouth.
Spring Tonic Online. Don't miss it.
Welcome back to our interview with Professor Magda Havas, who has been investigating whether the deterioration in power quality, known as dirty electricity, makes us electro-hypersensitive. In the first segment of our discussion, Professor Havas mentioned that she actually conducted an experiment with certain filters for dirty electricity. So I asked her to elaborate.
These filters are technically called capacitors. They're called Graham-Stetzer filters, and they were designed by Professor Martin Graham, who's professor emeritus at UC Berkeley in California, and by David Stetzer, who's with Stetzer Electric in Wisconsin. They designed the filters because people were complaining of poor health in their home and mostly on farms where their animals were getting ill as well, particularly cattle. And Dave Stetzer is a power quality expert, and so what he did is he would go to these farms where the animals were ill and where the people were ill, and he began to trace, to try to figure out what the problem was. They assumed it was electrical because they had eliminated all other problems with feed and air quality and water pollution, that type of thing. And he realized that there were a lot of high frequencies on the electrical wires. Dave Stetzer and Professor Martin Graham designed these filters, capacitors, and they began to give them away to people. And when people plugged them into their homes, one of the things they noticed is that many of their symptoms disappeared.
Experiments yield results and sometimes benefits. Has anyone benefited from this study?
There are people who are diabetic or who have multiple sclerosis who have benefited when the dirty electricity was reduced in their homes. And the reason I think this is so important is we know that diabetes is on the rise, particularly type 2 diabetes. And my sense of this is that some of that increase may actually be due to the environment as opposed to genetics or your eating habits or the fact that you don't exercise as much as you should. And I think it's important to bring that to the attention of the medical profession, to just be aware of the fact that high blood sugar levels measured in the doctor's office where there's a lot of dirty electricity may actually give you a false reading. And some people, when you measure it in a doctor's office and then immediately go outside and sit outside for half an hour, measure it outside in the clean environment, their blood sugar drops dramatically to levels that aren't considered diabetic. So I think this raises a whole issue that is more objective than simply the concept of electrical hypersensitivity and developing a headache, for example, that's very difficult to quantify. We're also finding that people who have multiple sclerosis and have difficulty walking and have tremors have benefited enormously when their homes have been cleaned, to the point where some people who walked with canes are able to walk unassisted within a matter of a few days to a few weeks. And the results have been so dramatic that I think if I hadn't videotaped them and just left them to sort of my recollection of what someone was like before and after, I wouldn't have believed it. And certainly the people who have benefited are extremely, you know, relieved and grateful that they can find relief if their environment is clean.
Professor Havas revealed another couple of important benefits from the study after doing it in a grade school. She elaborates.
In addition to the multiple sclerosis and the diabetes, when the filters were put into schools, one of the things a school nurse noticed is that the number of children who had respiratory problems, particularly asthma, after the filters were put in, they didn't need to use their puffers on a daily basis. And this is something that people with respiratory problems are documenting over and over again, mostly from anecdotal accounts. And asthma is another illness that seems to be on the rise, particularly among young children. The other thing that we noticed in schools is that children who misbehave or have, you know, very high energy levels, many of these young children are classified with attention deficit disorder. And when we put filters in schools and teachers document the behavior of their students, one of the things they noticed is that much of this behavior that is similar to attention deficit, was significantly reduced, and children were able to concentrate better. They paid attention. They didn't require, they didn't waste as much classroom time. And so, you know, it just raises questions that why are so many young children being diagnosed and then being given drugs for, you know, as a form of therapy, when it could very well be something, you know, in their environment that's causing this hyperactivity.
And the problem is not only present with grade schoolers. Listen as Professor Havas explains how much earlier in life this can start.
Well, we actually put filters in a nursery school, and of course, you know, the children were too young, didn't know what we were doing at all. We also had dummy filters so that there wasn't a placebo effect, and we had the teacher document the behavior of the students with the real filter and the dummy filter, although she didn't know which was which. What was really interesting is one evening when I went over there, she said, "I know which is the real filter." And I said, "How do you know?" She says, "Well, the children's behavior is totally different." And she was right. So she could tell without just by their behavioral changes that it was having a positive effect.
Many thanks to Magda Havas, Associate Professor at the Environmental Studies Department of Trent University in Ontario, Canada, and an expert on the health claims of electricity. You can find out more about this topic by clicking on the links to our show location, SciTech File, at our website, www.rcinet.ca. Coming up, that tonic we promised you, but first a response to a listener's question. Michael Oliphant of Toronto, Canada writes the following. Modern society is generating much more heat today compared to before the Industrial Revolution. Machinery, air conditioning, furnaces, cars, all pumping out heat. Michael's question is, has anyone tried to quantify the amount of additional heat introduced into the environment by today's society? And does it contribute to global warming? For the answer, Bob MacDonald went to University of Western Ontario in London, where Dr. James Voot is an associate professor of geography.
So, Dr. Voot, can you calculate how much heat we're putting into the atmosphere with our technology? And we're not talking about greenhouse gases here, just the raw heat that emanates from our machines and engines.
Well, that's a question that we have looked at in the context of studying the climates of cities, and we give that type of heat the caller is asking about the label anthropogenic heat.
So take me through how you calculate that.
Well, the calculations come about usually from what we call a bottom-up approach. So we would try to find, for a unit of the city, and that can be the tricky part, the use of all the different sources of energy. So electricity use, natural gas use, fuel oil use, and vehicle use of fuels, which sometimes is simply related to how far they drive. So getting the numbers to try to represent those sometimes is a bit tricky. And as well, simply the population density also contributes a little bit, not a lot, but just you and I, through breathing, have a metabolic component, which is included in that anthropogenic heat flux. So we take all those numbers and we convert them to energy units, and then over the spatial area that we do the calculations, we come up with a number in watts per meter squared.
Boy, so how much then are we throwing into the atmosphere just through direct heat?
Well, anywhere from about 10 watts per meter squared at the very low end up to, in the biggest, most densely populated portions of, say, Tokyo, I've seen numbers upwards of over 1,000 watts per meter squared.
Boy. Okay, so when we look at all the factors that are contributing to global warming, how much does this play into it?
Well, it doesn't make a very big difference because cities cover only a very small fraction of the Earth's surface. So that contribution ends up being negligible.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy, I mean, you think about all the cars that are on the road, all the machinery that we have around. Why is it not more significant?
Well, it's the atmosphere itself is is a big volume for that heat, so the heat's all just being injected at the surface, so the numbers are large at the surface, but when temperature changes get mixed into the atmosphere, they essentially get diluted, and most of the surface isn't covered by cities, so these numbers have a very spatially constrained effect. So when you are calculating the heat from the car, it's simply just the heat from the car, and it's not considering, for example, the greenhouse gas emissions. So the footprint, if you like, of the car does extend well beyond the city, but it's for reasons other than its direct heating of the atmosphere.
So we're just not as important as we thought.
Well, but we are, right? That's the interesting thing, is that the car doesn't heat the atmosphere very much, but its emissions create, you know, ground-level smog that extends for hundreds of kilometers and greenhouse gases that extend over the whole globe.
Okay. And I guess, as you say, most of the Earth is not covered by land. We're a water planet, so it's just a scale thing here that we're talking about.
It is a scale thing.
Dr. Voot, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Dr. James Voot is an associate professor of geography at the University of Western Ontario. He spoke with Bob McDonald, host of the CBC science show, Quirks and Quarks. So you're feeling a little pooped after winter. Feel like you're getting old and those bones are just not carrying you. Well, join the club. But you know, there's probably nothing really wrong with you or me after a long winter that a spring tonic of the right kind wouldn't cure. Internet Explorer Stephen Fraygood has been searching for the best all-around pick-me-up in cyberspace, and here's what he's come up with.
For starters, I found this music at the Healing Headquarters. That's healinghq.com. I expected all that New Age meditation stuff that puts me to sleep, but this music by Dove is kind of cheerful, isn't it? Another way to cheer up is The Happiness Show. No kidding, a regular TV webcast devoted entirely to, well, happiness. One route to happiness, for example, is just what I always suspected. Go out and buy something.
Okay, why are we going to talk about happiness in business? Because business is already in the business of happiness. Every product that's sold has as its purpose, its implicit purpose, to help us become happier. And that's everything. That's, you know, anything we can possibly buy. I mean, the reason that we buy it is because we think in some way it's going to make us happier. And it does. A lot of stuff does.
Old-time spring tonics like sulfur and molasses worked on the general principle, no pain, no gain. The new ones I found on the web all follow in that tradition.
The fruit looks like a bumpy potato. But the fruit is not a sweet fruit that we would be used to tasting like an apple, let's say. It tastes more like a hunk of fermented cheese.
As a rule, whatever is bitter in the mouth is sweet to the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
We also have put in wormwood in that particular product. It's very bitter. There has been some controversy about wormwood, but it's not really justified because most of the world has heard of the Martini and Rossi vermouth.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Martini and Rossi has been making their vermouth for, I would say, for hundreds of years. And the main ingredient in vermouth is wormwood. Vermouth means wormwood. So I'm a friend of wormwood.
The tastiest form of wormwood is the liqueur absinthe. It's what Van Gogh was drinking when he cut his ear off. But like the herbal doctor said, vermouth is also a source of wormwood, plus other healthy goodies. In fact, I believe that when you add the health benefits of stuffed olives and juniper berries, you have just made the ultimate spring tonic.
Just a drink. A martini, shaken, not stirred.
And James Bond knew his herbal remedies. This medical report is from the BBC.
We do know that the martinis seem to have a lot more antioxidant capability than either of the components of the martini, and we think that there's some sort of synergistic effect going on here between the gin and the vermouth, so that when they're mixed, they actually are better than either one could be by itself.
And stirring it actually negates the
good side of it?
Stirring
it doesn't seem to do quite as much.
So, what makes people feel old and tired? Money worries, that's what. My recommendation, try Alex Chu's immortality rings. According to his website, alexchu.com, put on his amazing immortality rings and you will never grow old and you will never have money worries again.
I mean, you are young forever. You are healthy forever. So you're always healthy and you're always very energetic. You can work at any kind of job. You know, right now you walk on the street, every other person wants to become a millionaire. I think after putting on eternal life device, their personalities will change. They would start to forget about money.
Immortality rings, only $31, including shipping and Alex Chu's fabulous 90-day money-back guarantee. I'm Stephen Fragrin.
Something for everyone. Thank you, Stephen. Ah, yes, spring, when a young man's fancy turns to thoughts of... I'll let you fill in the rest. And that is the program for this week. My thanks to studio technician Francine Rondeau for holding it all together. If you'd like to get in touch with us with a comment or science question you'd like answered, our email address is scitechfile@rcinet.ca, or our postal address, if you prefer, is SciTechFile, Radio Canada International, Post Office Box 6000, Montreal, Canada, and the postal code is H3C3A8. I'm Roman Pitt for Victor Nirenberg, who will be back in this chair next week. Thanks for joining us.